Netflix's research and marketing executive. Storytelling seems to be back on the agenda in content marketing, judging by the number of recent blog posts we've seen. But what exactly do we mean by storytelling in marketing? We have James Henry, TV comedy and drama writer, to talk about the structure of classic storytelling.
Hello.
And lead copywriter Fiona Campbell-Howes to talk about how some of this can be adapted for content marketing.
Hello.
James, can you talk about how some of the basic elements of storytelling, you know, what are they and what does a good story kind of tend to contain?
A lot of it is about structure. So what's a good story is often quite subjective, which I know isn't very helpful. But you can make it a strong story if you include classical structure, which means three-act structure, which normally means your first act is the setup for your story that introduces the main characters, locations, and the central conflict. Second act is a series of escalating confrontations, whether those be martial arts battles or songs or sword fights, also acceptable. And the third act is the resolution of the story. I mean, that's really boiling it down to sort of nuts and bolts, but that's the shape, the accepted shape of a story in three acts there.
What other elements then are there beyond sort of like the three act structure that people could consider the hero's journey, or is that relevant as a
you want the emotional connection to the characters. It's always really, really important. I mean, they can be weirdly likeable. I mean, if you think of Blackadder, he wasn't directly likeable, he wasn't laudable, he wasn't kind of virtuous, but you kind of were on his side. I suspect mainly because the characters around him were sort of complete idiots and he was the only smart one, so you kind of got his respect. But it is having that connection with the person and really the protagonist. And you want them to succeed. Or if they fail, you want them to fail nobly. That's also acceptable. But it's about that sort of spark of human connection, I think. And I think when people talk about a human story, they mean that feeling of genuine emotion. Well, you can fake it, but you have to be very, very good. That's what drama is, I suppose.
So I know one of the things, because people are publishing a lot of articles and blog posts about storytelling and what is storytelling and how can we use it in marketing. And one of the things they often talk about is, oh, you need to have a hero. Generally, we would say you would present your customer as the hero. And this hero has to go through this journey. And so there's this idea that there is the hero's journey. So can you explain a bit about how that actually works and what is the hero's journey?
Yeah, well, the hero's journey, it's also called the monomyth, which comes from Joseph Campbell, who's a researcher into kind of religious and mythical stories. And the more he looked at these stories from all over the world, so sort of Africa and Asia and European, he started to realise that they all kind of plotted, they all hit points along a particular overarching myth, which he called the monomyth. The idea is this monomyth is a hero's journey. It's almost all, like, they're all one story about a hero who sets out from the ordinary world, undergoes a series of trials, and finally faces down his kind of dark shadow, his own dark self. It's like he's Darth Vader to his Luke Skywalker. And then returns to his own community with a boon, with something that kind of enhances everyone's life, something that makes the community better. So if you look at this sort of hero's journey, I mean, Star Wars kind of followed, George Lucas used it as a template, and you can use it as a template for movies, a lot of people do. Harry Potter kind of follows that exact trajectory of, you know, someone from an ordinary, very mundane world who then gets plunged into a supernatural world with his own rules, and you learn when you overcome adversaries and you make companions and you find people who might be on your side and might not, the sort of shape changes, and you will eventually face down your sort of your dark shadow. So if you're talking about it in those great big mythic dramatic terms, that's what the hero's journey is.
But does it necessarily have to be hugely mythic and dramatic, or can you kind of apply the hero's journey to basically mundane situations?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Like, I mean, I'm not saying that our clients' customers work in mundane situations in mundane organisations, but the problems that they face every day probably aren't epic problems, but they are problems that they still need to overcome.
No, exactly, and then that's why reality TV is as popular as Star Wars, if you like, as many people watch reality shows, because it is ordinary people's lives, but they have understandable struggles. So, I don't know, someone having a terrible fight with their best friend shouldn't be as dramatic as Luke Skywalker kind of fighting Darth Vader, but there's something of the same shape in there, and humans recognise those narrative shapes. So, yeah, although the hero's journey is all about mythical kind of struggles, you can also take it at a much more grounded kind of level and just use those techniques and recognise that there are certain stock characters and situations that will that are almost in any story, and it's knowing when to bring them out of the box, if you like.
And if you have, you're sitting down to write something, say, for example, a video, and you've got your three-act structure and you've got your idea of your hero's journey, does it automatically create a story, a good story, or are there things that you need to watch out for, or things that you need to avoid doing that makes the story less engaging?
Ooh, that's a very good question. It won't automatically create a good story because you need that spark of life. It will create a strong story that will keep people's interest. If you've got the three acts there, you've got a strong setup, you explain who your character is, you explain the struggles that they're facing, then you show them slowly working out how to overcome those struggles, and then a resolution, which could be simple as, there we go, I've got the job, or I've done the task. That's kind of it. I mean, it's not kind of the glamorous end of storytelling, but that kind of mechanical stuff is really, really useful in creating a strong story that people can understand, which is almost by definition a good story, I guess.
Yeah. And what happens if you don't have that structure in place? What can happen to your story?
It's amazing how quickly you can lose the viewer's interest. It's a difference between a stand-up comedian who really knows their stuff and engages with you, and someone who just sort of makes a list of observations that could really like come in any order and aren't really about anything. I tend to use my dad telling stories about going to a conference as an example, which is very unfair on my dad. But he places a lot of emphasis on, you know, how clean the toilets were and what the, you know, how strong the coffee was and things like that. And there's no real sense of kind of a narrative of what the conference was about or what he learned from there or what he set out to do there. It's almost like a sort of travel review of something. It's quite interesting, quite strange. So you can lose people. I pitch a lot. I have to pitch stories to, say, shows that are already existing and they're looking for a new writer. So if EastEnders were looking for a new writer, I don't write for soaps, but if EastEnders was looking for a new writer, you go in and you go, right, I've got some great ideas about the characters in the pub. I have to say that because I don't know who they are. But you'd have to go, right, this character turns out has a dark secret from the past and it catches up. And you kind of have to tell a story about how you're going to tell a story, which is a bit meta. But if you sort of stand there doing this pitch and you hear yourself going, oh, and then this happens, and then that happens, and then another thing happens, oh, I forgot the thing that at the beginning that was quite important, like, you know, like a dad telling a joke, you've lost them. It has to be, if you're pitching a story, you're kind of telling a story, and you have to do the whole thing of this happens, and therefore this other thing happens, and that causes that to happen, and because of that, this other thing happens. And then you're kind of taking people on a little bit of a journey, which is all people really want out of a story. They want to be transported. It doesn't have to be anywhere hugely mythical, but they want to be transported outside of themselves, bound up with someone else's struggle, and then get some form of resolution from it. So and if you've got the kind of underlying structure, it stops it becoming kind of listless and ironically a list of things. It just stops it fizzling out.
And I think in terms of, you know, seeing that character and watching the story unfold and getting bound up in it, I think maybe where the work that we do differs from maybe the work that you do is that when we present that character, we want our audience very much to identify with that character and think that that is them. So we want to really reflect their own lives and their own problems back to them.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe in kind of more fictional Hollywood style storytelling, you would present a character who's completely different and alien, but because of the way that character behaves, you identify with them, but you don't really imagine that that's you in your life that you're seeing.
You say that, but actually a lot of, I mean, maybe really heightened guys like James Bond, the people like that, even then, you know, most guys watching James Bond think, yeah, I if I was trained, I probably could do that, what they did there.
My dad
likes to imagine he's James Bond in any given situation. But then, to be fair, so do I. But you kind of have to ground these characters. You have to make them behave in a believable way. I mean, it's where Jason Bourne kind of took over from James Bond, because he's just a little bit more realistic. You could identify with him just a little bit more. And, you know, he had real emotions. He didn't go on about what brand his watch was the whole time. And he was riddled with kind of guilt and fear. And he behaved in a way that you kind of think, well, if I was in that situation, I kind of would behave that way. So even if you're doing great big mythic things, or science fiction or fantasy and stuff, which is, it's getting away from marketing, but you always have to ground it. It's like with Lord of the Rings, you associate with Frodo, because he's the little guy, and he's a believable little chap in a huge fantasy world. And you could follow Aragorn, you could make it Aragorn's story, absolutely, but you wouldn't have that kind of you know, he's a guy who's like 80 years old but looks 30. He can speak to animals. He can do all sort of stuff. And after a while, you go, well, I'm not really with him, to be honest. He's getting a bit annoying now. But as a character who comes in and helps out Frodo, he's awesome. He's great. But it's all about grounding. Even fantastic characters, it's about grounding them in real... They have real frailties and real worries and real, you know, humanity. And you don't always have time. You'd think you wouldn't have time to get that across in a minute and a half, but you've always got time to show something, yeah. Something kind of real and grounded in these people. And they have real concerns, and that's how you identify with them.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we've talked about before is that you have your three-act structure and then you have this idea of the hero's journey, but there's also these sort of seven basic plots that most stories will follow. And we've talked before about what they are and how some of them are probably more relevant to the kind of work we do than others. So I don't know if you want to sort of go through a couple of those and talk about how they work and maybe the sorts of plots that marketers could start to think, well, I can see how that would apply if I'm telling a story about how a customer has use my product to do something or achieve something.
No, exactly. And it's this kind of mock mythic thing you can use where if you take a mundane problem and make it huge. I mean, one of the classic ones is Overcoming the Monster, which is the classic kind of basic plot, which is the oldest story. It's Beowulf and Saga of Gilgamesh. And it's a hero. Hero goes out to confront an enemy who's cast a dark shadow over the land. And the hero is the only person who can go out and defeat this kind of monster and bring back a boon for his community and make everyone safe. I mean, so that problem could be a computer bug. It could be, an environmental issue or something. It's just a hero who has to go out and deal with something. So it doesn't have to be, you can couch it in kind of mythic terms. It doesn't have to be a supernatural thing at all. And that's such a primal, simple, basic story that everyone can relate to. Arguably, it's more of a masculine story. It doesn't have to be, but there's something a little bit blokey about that. But you know, that kind of mock mythic thing. So someone setting out to do something, you can very quickly go from someone has to deal with a minor problem and turn it into something, you know, couch it in terms of a big mythic confrontation. Mm-hmm. And it gets a bit overplayed, so you have to be careful how you do it, but you can go there.
Yeah, and I think from our point of view, writing a customer case study, the customer that you're interviewing is probably going to be happier to be placed in the role of this hero.
Yeah.
Maybe even more likely to sign the story off than if it was just a kind of dry story about how brilliant our client's technology was and how the technology was the hero of the story. If
exactly,
we make the customer the hero of the story, then
it's
a better story, but they're also going to like it and probably more likely to approve it.
Yeah, I mean, Frodo's got a little magic sword called Sting. Is it called Sting? Is that Bilbo's? Someone in the Lord of the Rings films has got a magic sword. And the magic sword's great, but, you know, it's not... You wouldn't make the film about the magic sword. It's a tool which is there to help the hero on his journey, you know. He's earned it, really.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, one that's quite relevant for us in the business world is Rags to Riches, although I don't think you think that's a particularly satisfying
kind
of story.
Well, it can be. No, it can be. In a way, it's the simplest story with Dick Whittington. It's a character who's like comes from very humble beginnings and gradually overcomes a series of adversities and works their way to the top. So it's Dick Whittington going from an urchin to the Mayor of London. It's almost every sports movie ever. It's a series of scrappy underdogs who kind of just about win every sporting confrontation by the skin of their teeth. And then incredibly, they win the cup by the end. And in a lot of those sporting movies, you've seen them a million times before, but you can't help getting caught up with it. You know it's going to go, but you don't know how it's going to get there, and that's what's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of business terms, I can see how that's an attractive one if you take it very literally. But it's not... Seeing someone gradually become richer and richer in this like big spot isn't a very interesting story in its own. It's the obstacles that are interesting, and it's the character of the hero and how he gets past those obstacles each time. And they have to escalate, they have to become more and more difficult, more and more personal. And how you get past those difficulties. So when you get to the top, you've earned it. That's always, you know, you kind of don't begrudge someone who's earned his way to the top, I think.
I think those are quite nice stories when you're talking about startups. When you're talking about businesses and you're talking about startups and how they've overcome all the obstacles to grow the company and become successful. And that's the basis, I guess, the kind of rags to riches plot is the basis of a lot of stories that you might read in Wired or Fast Company that, which is some of where we're coming from and, you know, how our clients' technologies have helped those companies to grow and overcome obstacles and be successful.
But then how can these basic sort of story ideas and all that kind of be combined and applied to content marketing in of itself? Like, what can people actually do with it?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting question because I've read so many articles and blog posts recently about storytelling. It seemed to be a big thing last year, then it went away, now it's come back. And the whole thing for me is when people talk about in marketing, you've got to tell stories. There seems to be such a liberal interpretation of what you mean by a story that it becomes almost meaningless. So, for example, yesterday, there's a marketing automation software vendor called HubSpot, and yesterday they were having their 8th anniversary. So what they'd done to celebrate their 8th anniversary, to do a thing for social media, is that they'd got all of their people, I think, in Dublin into their foyer, and they'd all stood in a figure of 8 sign and had a photo taken and put it on Twitter. And then somebody had seen this and retweeted it and said, this is a brilliant example of visual storytelling from HubSpot. And it's literally a photo of all the people in their office saying it's our 8th birthday. It's not a story in the sense that it's not overcoming a monster.
Unless the villain is not. I don't know how, yeah.
You could infer that this is a rags to riches story because, they've been around for 8 years and they're a successful company. But there's no real story behind that. But yet this is still given as an example of storytelling. So what I'm interested in is how can we take some of the things that James has been talking about and apply them to the work that we do to make stories more compelling. And I did read recently a really interesting article about how the structure of classic storytelling relates to the structure of marketing content by a guy, I think he's called Andrew Hutchinson, based in Australia, I think. And he was saying that in marketing, you've got a very, very short space of time to get your story over. You haven't got the luxury of a 2-hour, 3-hour film or, 500 page novel or anything like that. So he's saying what marketers should do is look at those films, look at really successful films, look at the structure of the story, look at the moments of really heightened emotional intensity in those stories, and take those moments and use those. It's like a sort of greatest hits reel, I guess. It's like take those moments and use those in your marketing, and use those moments to then hang the story off. So people recognise those moments, they understand that those moments are heightened moments of intensity. It draws them in straight away, and then you hang the story almost off the back of them. It's almost doing things backwards. And I found that really interesting. And then I was looking back over some of the videos that we'd previously looked at, B2B marketing videos, do they work as stories or don't they work as stories? And I found the one, again, which is an Intel video about one of the winners of their, they have a sort of Young Innovators Award, and they had this 15-year-old boy who had sort of made a breakthrough in research for a cure for pancreatic cancer. And he'd won their award for that year. And they start this video with the really most intense emotional moment of this guy's entire story, I guess, which is when he's coming up to the stage. They're just about to announce the winner. They announce it's him. He comes up to the stage to receive his award, and you can see on his face the emotion, intensity that he's feeling. They start with that, and then they sort of rewind and go back and tell his story about how he's made this breakthrough and how he's done it in his science class at school. So that's something that I found really interesting, a way of taking what you'd expect from a classic story, applying it to a kind of marketing context. But I know there are lots of other ways that marketers can tell stories that might not actually be considered stories in the classic storytelling sense. And I think when a lot of people say, oh, marketers need to tell stories, or oh, salespeople need to tell stories in order to close deals, what they mean is they need to be telling anecdotes. So it's not, three-act structure stories. Yeah. It's just basic anecdotes of here's somebody that was in a similar situation to you, and here's what they did, and here's how it turned out for them.
Well, as soon as you're talking about anecdotes, you're into stories, and amazingly, you are into three-act structure, I think, which is quite interesting. You're incredibly sort of simple point of view, but saying here's a character, you can fracture it, you can start at the end, you can say here's a very successful person, how did they become this successful, and then find out more about it, or you could start with someone kind of poised on a precipice, it could go either way. Then you go back and get and see how he got there. So yeah, although I'm talking about big mythic kind of stories, you can tell these stories in a minute and a half, or a minute, or three frames, or infographics. They're all equally relevant. But if you understand the basics of kind of setup, escalating confrontation, and then resolution, you've kind of got just a little tiny toolkit. You know how to pull things apart that aren't working. You understand how to convey ideas that have some emotional resonance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you say that you can do it in a minute or a minute and a half. I think one of the best places where I've seen anecdotes used and where you can get it across in just seconds or fractions of a second is not in video, it's in The Economist. So if you read through The Economist, which you might think is absolutely chock full of dry topics that nobody would be interested about at all, and statistics and graphs and all of this. If you actually read The Economist and you look at the way they structure their articles, I would say a good 50% of each of their articles starts with an anecdote or starts with a story, a really kind of vivid scene description of how whatever they're, the subject that they're talking about, how it affects a real person on the ground in that country. And it just immediately brings the whole article to life. And if you compare that with some business writing that's not as accomplished as The Economist, you know, they'll start off with, we found that 88% of people think this, whereas The Economist will go straight in, here's, a mother struggling to bring up her child in China because she hasn't got access to, this, that, and the other, and just really focus on how this is actually affecting the lives of the life of the person.
And just the person,
and then go on and talk about the stats.
Yeah. And just the person talking to camera as well. You don't have to illustrate absolutely everything. You think of When Harry Met Sally, and there's all these lovely little moments of all these old couples talking about how they met and how they fell in love. And those people don't get everything acted out. It's just people talking to a camera. But that's as valid a story. And sometimes it's more. You have to know. I think knowing when less is more is really, really important as well. When not to pull every trick out of the box, and when to just have someone talking to a camera. That's really important.
So I think when we think about storytelling and when we look at articles with advice about storytelling, what they're basically coming down to for us, for marketing, is that you need to humanise the story. You're not talking about numbers, you're not talking about technologies. You need to bring in a kind of human aspect to it. But I think, from what we've talked about here, there are ways and means of bringing in a human angle to a story. And if you can bear this kind of three-act structure in mind and bear in mind that there needs to be some kind of conflict and some kind of escalating series of confrontations for it to be an interesting story, then that is inherently going to be a more interesting and engaging story than if you just had a human person in it.
Yes, I think so, yeah. That does a lot of, that sort of structural stuff does a lot of the work for you and kind of carries the listener or the viewer, whatever, along. Because people are just used to stories, it's ingrained in them, so they get, it kind of puts them at their ease, going, okay, I mean, this kind of story, I know roughly where we're going to go, but not how. And I think that does a lot of the work for you.
So do you have any final recommendations for our listeners in this episode?
I think the important one, as I said, this comes with pitching, something I do a lot, is that a story is not just a list of things that happened, of A and a B and then C and then D. It always has to be A happens, because of that B happens, and therefore C. And it just takes you on a little journey. And I think if you find yourself listing things or saying and then, you need to stop and just have another think, because there's always going to be a more interesting way in.
And I think, if I was to give one piece of advice, I really like this idea that you look in the story that you've got, whatever your story is that you're writing about or creating a video about, if you look for what is the moment of heightened emotional intensity and hang your story off that, I think that's a really good way for marketers to approach stories.
Well, that's all we've got time for this episode of the Radix Copycast. You can follow Radix on Twitter at radixcom, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly e-newsletter for the latest copywriting tips and insights.